All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. And today's episode, we are joined by The Athletic's Jeff Schultz, covers Atlanta sports, Braves. And we're going to be talking with him about the Falcons and all the coaches, front office changes that have occurred this past week, as well as what could change for this team in the future.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Help support local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been there on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly on FalcFans.com, RIP, currently on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, hosting this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's episode, I am joined by none other than Jeff Schultz of The Athletic. He's going to talk with us about all the changes going on in Atlanta over the past 48 hours with the coaching changes, the GM changes, Raheem Morris, what's next for this team, Rich McKay, Arthur Blank, all these various things. And we're going to get into that coming up right now on today's Locked On Falcons podcast. And today I am joined by my good friend Jeff Schultz of The Athletic, coming back to talk with us about all the things that have gone on with the Falcons over the past 48 hours as we're recording this. And Jeff, you know, I promise you that you'd be able to get back on to talk about something positive. I know for a lot of Falcon fans, the firing of Dan Quinn is a positive for the team. I think I already know your answer, but I'm curious sort of where you stand on that issue.
Yeah, I don't look, I like Dan personally, and I don't necessarily root for anybody to lose their job. But from a team standpoint, and I can certainly understand from a fan standpoint, it wasn't working anymore. I think, you know, once Dan sort of, has a chance to decompress from all this, he's going to feel obviously very bad. I'm sure he already does for, you know, the team's performance. He's going to reflect on maybe what went wrong. But he's going to understand that Arthur Blank made the right decision, that there really was no choice. It couldn't go on anymore. He's had long enough to turn it around. This season certainly proved that the second half of last season was an aberration, that the reality was closer to the first half of last season. And so, yeah, I guess that's about all I've got to say about that.
Now, you were the one who sort of first broke that the Falcons were planning on moving on from Dan Quinn Sunday afternoon. Arthur Blank, the Falcons owner, called it a lack of winning that prompted the move. Do you have any other particular insights to why the Falcons made the move now as opposed to earlier, or whether or not they could wait till later?
Well, I sort of hinted at this a little bit in the column. I think he would have been fired. First of all, obviously, the decision was made to bring him back. That decision was made for whatever reasons, but in part because Arthur wanted to cling to the possibility that the 6-2 finish last year might actually have signaled that they figured some things out with the team, with defensively, with the coaching staff, with who works, who doesn't work. And I think going into this season, you saw what those first four games were, and it was a tough start. I mean, in those first four games on the schedule. And I think in my mind, they would have done it after game four. But because it was a short week on a Monday night, because Arthur got back at, you know, 3-4 in the morning, the team got back at 5-6 in the morning, whatever time it was, it didn't really allow for time for Arthur to sit down with Dan and as we now realize, Thomas, to say, look, this isn't working. To throw, you know, coaching transitions are always tough. They always take time. That's why a lot of them sort of take place on bye weeks, when everybody sort of has a chance to take a step back. Coaches have a chance to meet with players. And it's, you know, there's that whole, okay, let's just move forward kind of thing and see how good of a finish we could have. It's hard to do when you don't have a bye week. It's really hard to do in a short week. So I think the thought was, let's give them one more game. Let's give them the game against Carolina. This is a game, in theory, you should win. And if they win, then you sit back, much like you sat back last year after they went into New Orleans and won that game that nobody expected they would win after the bye week. And you just kind of go week by week or every couple weeks. And they didn't. They lost. We saw many of the things that we've seen in the first few weeks and in the first half down the last year. We saw Isaiah Oliver just looking terrible. We just saw so many bad things. I hate to even pick on one person but we saw a lot of bad things. But I'll pick on it like Deion Jones. You have to get back to the fact that this is a defensive head coach, and the problems that were fixed last year were by Raheem Morris and or Dan Quinn. And you go into the season and you're seeing the exact same things. You're not just seeing things not happening in a good way because of a lack of athleticism. Certainly, I do think, and I've said on your podcast before, Aaron, that I think some of this talent has been overrated. But you are seeing just way too much miscommunication, way too much confusion, way too much guys just not having a clue about what's going on. And in some cases, as I'm sure you've seen when you looked on film, it seemed like some guys are playing different schemes or different coverages on the same play. And I think it just got to be too much, and he had to do it. And I mean, I'll say this, I can say it now. I've kind of known this for about a week or two, that if he was going to get fired after the Carolina game, it was not going to be announced first thing Monday morning. And the reason for that was because of the grant, the $200 million grant that Arthur had planned to announce for the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, which is a tremendous thing that he was doing, and he didn't want to overshadow that. That was an announcement that had been planned for months, months. They had done pre-recorded interviews and whatever. And obviously when this thing was first planned, they weren't thinking, oh boy, on that Monday though, I might have to fire my coach Dan Quinn. Yeah. And so the plan was to announce it later Monday or Tuesday, which is why I wrote the initial story the way I did. And then I think after I tweeted that, or I briefed it and then went to a tweet around 4:45 or whatever in the afternoon, basically after the game, it just went viral. And everybody, national athlete, picked it up. Arthur, I think, was out to dinner with his family at the time. And I think he just got to the point of he just said, F it. Yeah. I mean, honestly. And they made that announcement. Obviously, they had the press release ready to go. He had the letter to season ticket holders ready to go because it was going to happen and probably, you know, the next day anyway, late in the day. That was it. They announced it that night. I did not. You might ask me about Thomas. I wasn't sure about Thomas. I'd sort of stayed away from that part of the storyline because while Dan and Thomas Dimitroff were in many ways linked and should have been linked together in terms of whether they stayed or whether they went. Part of me knows that that Blank likes to collect former general managers, number one.
Yeah.
part of it is because he likes Thomas on a personal level. This hasn't really been addressed that much publicly, but Thomas and Dan still have 2 years left on their contract, each of them. And I thought, and he liked Thomas a lot and respected him a lot in many ways, even though he knew he probably couldn't go on as a general manager. I thought he might be retained, not as a GM, but in some voice or capacity in the front office, some weird, vague, nebulous vice president kind of position. And if they wouldn't announce that right away, they would announce at the end of the year. But, you know, Arthur's very concerned about image and perception, and I'm sure he didn't want the whole talking points for the next 11 weeks to be, how could you fire the coach and not the GM? So I guess he just decided to push the button on both, basically.
Well, you did accurately predict what was my next question. but with you answering that, we will sort of move on to my next question, which will be sort of picking your brain on sort of the quote-unquote promotion of Raheem Morris as the Falcons interim coach. And we'll continue to talk about that on today's Locked On Falcons podcast. And before we get there, talking about how the Falcons' current season is going to be different, We know that this football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. Whether you're watching from home or one of the 6,500 willing to make the brave journey to Mercedes-Benz Stadium to watch the Falcons, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power you through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So, you know, talking with you, Jeff Schultz of The Athletic, I know some people have been kind of critical of the team's decision to promote Raheem Morris as their interim coach, given how awful the defense has been this year. Do you think that's a fair way to question this move?
Well, I guess the way to answer that, Aaron, is I don't know if there would have been any less criticism if they promoted Dirk Cutter. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so those are the two primary candidates. You could throw out Jeff Ulbrich, who is an assistant head coach, and in theory, because he has that title of assistant head coach, it could have been him. But he is, I don't know how to say this. I don't want to sound mean, but he's just not. I don't think he's the guy number one who wants to be out front. I think there's a reason why he didn't want to be a defensive coordinator for a long time. I think he's the kind of guy. It's a different personality. He would rather just kind of be locked in his room, breaking down film and coaching his position. I just don't see him in that role. And so I think it really came down to a few reasons why it happened. Number one, you could more easily move Raheem Morris. I mean, obviously Dirk Cutter and Raheem Morris both have head coaching experience. And if we're going to move forward on the assumption, it had to be one of those two guys. Okay.
Yeah.
Unless there's another candidate. Okay. So that I'm missing. It's basically him. You're not going to go Bob Sutton on me.
You're not going to go Ben Kotakwa either. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although he's available.
Yeah.
okay. So Dirk Cutter, Raheem Morris, both head coaches. Raheem Morris, theoretically, you could slide him into the interim head coaching spot and bring up somebody behind him to basically take over defensive play calling if you weren't going to have the head coach do both. You had that quote-unquote depth on the defensive side of the ball, and I realize that sort of lobbied you a softball, but you had that.
Mm-hmm.
On the offensive side of the ball, if you move Dirk Cutter up, then I don't really know who you were going to have call plays. I think Dirk showed last year in Tampa that being a head coach and calling plays sometimes does not work out best for him. As I recall, the Bucs play calling improved last year when he gave it up. That's just fact. And so I also think on a personal level, I know Dirk pretty well. I know him from when he was here last time. I actually get along with him well, but I also know that when he would be asked questions about the game plan from the previous game, Dirk can get prickly. And to say he was prickly in Tampa as a head coach probably would be an understatement if you talk to some of the media members down there. So, you know, you're taking over an 0-5 team, logic would suggest they're not going to go 9-2 in the second, you know, under the interim coach for the rest of the year. There's going to be a lot of negative vibes and feelings and questions in those press conferences, whether in person or virtual. I don't know how well Dirk would handle that. Raheem, conversely, will handle that well. He's a very personable guy. And look, another fact you can't deny it is he's African American. I mean, the truth of the matter is this is a league that doesn't have nearly enough African American coaches. And you saw what they did in Houston when a coach got fired, right? You put Romeo Crennel out there. I mean, it's a way for at least a couple NFL owners to this point to say, see, we're trying to put these guys out front and give them a chance. It's weak, if you're asking me, because it's not legitimate. I'll feel it's legitimate when more African-American coaches are really hired, but it's an easy way for them to say, we're putting these guys out front and we're giving them a chance. You're never going to hear them say that, but that's my opinion.
That was going to be my next question, Jeff. So kudos to you.
Look at that, anticipating your questions.
Yeah, I guess I got to change up my style because clearly, no, but that's something I've talked about previously on the podcast in sort of looking back at the data over the last 20 years since 2000, 34% of interim coaches have been African-American coaches. But when you look at the sort of permanent hires, only about 17% of those hires have been African or minorities in this case, if you count coaches like Ron Rivera and whatnot. You know, I've seen some criticism of Arthur Blank when he spoke about how sort of Morris might get a chance to be the permanent coach if they go 11-0. And some people have sort of likened that to some of the obstacles that black candidates have to go to overcome being head coaches than their white counterparts. Do you think that's a fair criticism, or did you just take that as I did, as Arthur Blank just sort of being sarcastic and saying that in jest?
Okay, so yeah, I'm glad you asked the question that way. Arthur Blank was being sarcastic. He was trying to make a joke. It was not the time probably to make that joke because of the times that we live in right now. Arthur was innocent from the standpoint of, again, he was not saying Raheem Morris has to go 11-0 to be considered. That's not what he was saying, but he was just kind of responding to the question that way. Well, yeah, if he goes 11-0, obviously I'm going to consider him. You know, he was cracking a joke, but it was very similar to, and I think I used this line in the column when he was asked about Matt Ryan and how Matt wants to play until he's 40. And Arthur basically left the door wide open to a potential change there. He didn't fall back on the usual, I want Matt Ryan to be a Falcon for life thing. It was like, basically he said, it's up to the new coaching staff. And he said, look, I love Matt Ryan, but I also love Dan and Thomas. It's like, and he was trying to say it, I love everybody, but that probably wasn't the best way, the day to say, I also love Dan and Thomas, because he just fired them. So he was making a joke. He was trying to be funny. He was being sarcastic, but I totally understand the criticism, why criticism was leveled in that case.
Yeah. So we're going to continue talking about Matt Ryan and his future, as well as maybe the future of what changes the Falcons might make in the front office, as well as to the coaching staff, as we wrap up today's Locked On Falcons podcast here with Jeff Schultz of The Athletic. But before we get there, if you're a GM candidate wanting to take the job here in Atlanta, you want to not be in a position where you're going to sacrifice control for somebody else. And that relates to what I want to talk about right now, which is you may want to eat healthier without having to sacrifice flavor. And you don't have to if you head over to BuiltBar.com. Built Bar is a great tasting protein bar. All Built Bars have 100% real chocolate, so they're great tasting. They taste like candy bars, but they're healthy because they're low in calories, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber. I'm a big fan of the coconut almond flavor, the peanut butter flavor, but I'm adding caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. There's 6 new flavors that they've unveiled this past summer into my regular rotation, and you guys can do so adding them to your rotation. All you have to do is head over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. And don't worry if you've already used that promo code again, you can use it right now so you don't have to miss out on the all new Built Bar. Again, use promo code Locked On for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Now, talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. What is easy is brushing it off and saying, hey, I've lost my mojo, or avoiding that quality time with your loved one because you've had a busy day at work and you're just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet with Roman because you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. And if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. To get started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL and complete your online visit today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. So one of the things you've written about, Jeff, recently, since the firing of Dimitroff and Dan Quinn, You've written how sort of the presence of Rich McKay at the top of the organization could potentially be an obstacle to attracting a good GM candidate and or head coaching candidate. Could you elaborate on that point?
Well, I mean, Rich McKay is a very powerful figure. He's a powerful figure in the league, with the competition committee. He's been with this organization for a long time. He's been in the NFL for a long time. And he is basically Arthur's right-hand man in terms of football ops during this whole period about whether or not Dan Quinn was going to be retained as the head coach. It wasn't Thomas Dimitroff that Arthur was talking to. It was Rich McKay. When Mike Smith was fired and they had to find a new head coach, Thomas Dimitroff was not really part of that search committee. It was not part of the interview process. That was pretty much all Rich McKay. Rich was the former general manager, was effectively fired in 2008 when Dimitroff was hired. Thomas and Mike Smith were basically in charge of football ops. They did a great job for a while. Things went downhill. Arthur then and Rich, who had been fired, was retained because Arthur liked him, again, on a personal level. He likes to collect former general managers. And really, most of all, he wanted Rich to help get him a new stadium. You got to roll back the clock. This is when Arthur was still trying to get financing for the new stadium, and Rich had done that down in Tampa. And he was a great asset for Arthur with the stadium. There was a point there when the stadium deal was done, I've been told, and Rich was probably going to go work for the league. And there were some hoops to sort of set up, and the job was sort of set up for him. And then he sort of decided he didn't want to go. He wanted to stay in Atlanta, and he wanted to kind of sort of slide back into football ops. And Arthur let him do that. This is 3-4 years ago, whenever it was. And what I've heard from talking to several people in the building was that it was not a real positive response. A lot of people didn't want Rich in there, not because he's a bad guy or anything, but it's like all of us, I think there was a trust level there. And it was all kind of seemed very weird and awkward that now this former general manager was coming back in to sort of watch over things. But that's Arthur's right. It's his team. He can do what he wants. And if he trusts and likes Rich McKay, then that's fine. It went to a new level before last season, as you know, when Rich basically became sort of the official layer between ownership and football ops. And Thomas and Dan were reporting to him. And we'll never really know to what degree Rich McKay was running things, saying no to things, saying yes to things. But the point is, he was there. He was the senior member of the staff. And Dan Quinn and Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff had a new boss that wasn't the owner. And now, as we spin it forward, Aaron, there are a number of great candidates out there to be a head coach and to be a general manager. But when you are going out to recruit for those positions, and you're basically, you know, you're offering years, you're offering money, you're promising the world, you're extolling all the positives about this job and the city and the fan base and the stadium and the facilities, there's one question that's going to come up with every candidate, and that is, what is Rich McKay's role? And I'm probably going in this more depth with you than I've done it in copy to this point. I hope the Athletic forgives me. It's going to come up. I've already had one person text me saying there are already some candidates who are wondering about the situation. Not that they're going to say no, but they really want to know. Because normally, if you go to, let's say, a general manager, or a head coach who's going to have the power, which the way it is a lot in the NFL now, when you really go after somebody, they're going to say, no, normally what you would do is you'd go to, you know, Bob Smith and say, you are in charge. Okay. We have some cap issues, but you are in charge. Do anything you want. But they can't really, like the owner can't really say that right now. Rich McKay theoretically can say that, but if you were a candidate, Aaron, and Rich McKay was saying that to you, and you're talking to the former general manager of the team, who's now basically team president, would you be more likely to believe him saying that or Arthur Blank saying that? Do you understand what I'm saying? There's two different layers of bosses now. And Arthur Blank, while he wants to win, you know he's not going to really get involved in transactional stuff. He will get involved in terms of money, how much is being spent. I don't know if that's the case with Rich. I don't think he wants to be – I know he doesn't want to be general manager anymore. No way a guy who's been around that long wants to work that hard anymore, honestly. But I think he's still going to want a certain level of control. I mean, it's just logical to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but it is a potential obstacle. And there's going to have to be a concerted effort on his part and Arthur's part to sell the candidates that this is their baby. They can do what they want.
Okay. All right. Yeah. This whole time I was just like, yeah, Rich McKay's more of a figurehead. He does the business side of things, but I think you laid out a compelling reason why that potentially, you know, whether it actually is, as you say, potentially could be an obstacle for, you know, some people coming into the building.
Yeah. And this was honestly, I wasn't really sure what Rich McKay's role was going to be moving forward until they had a Zoom press conference or a virtual press conference on Monday afternoon. And Rich laid it out. He basically said, you know, the general manager is in charge of personnel and the general manager reports to me. I mean, that's about as clear as you can say it. Well, if the general manager reports to you, are you saying you're not going to exert any control at all? It was very clear. And I was actually kind of surprised. I really sort of half expected that he would lead the search and then sort of stay out of the way or even state to some degree that he's not part of this. But they didn't really word it like that. Now, maybe it changes. It's possible. But right now, I'm not feeling too comfortable about it.
Now, with changes that may or may not be coming up, you've written about how this team's salary cap situation is problematic, to say the least. Do you still think that's going to be a significant obstacle for any new regime to have to overcome?
Well, I think it depends on the coach and how quickly he wants to win. I think if you were pursuing, say, a guy like Mike McCarthy who thought he could win right away in Dallas, you know, those types of coaches are going to win right away. If you're bringing in, conversely, a coach like Kyle Shanahan, or a young coach, or I'll throw, well, we can almost throw any of three names I would have brought up out there, a first-time head coach. I think any of those guys would be willing to take on that project as long as they can remake the team in kind of their own image. And they are given the contract, which is key, that suggests that. You're not going to bring in somebody for a four-year contract. They're going to probably have to go 6 or 7 years, I would think, on a contract. Both on coach and general manager. That's just my view, because I think it's going to take a couple of years to really sort of get out of the cap situation they're in. That doesn't mean they can't be competitive in the first 2 years, but regardless of what they do, particularly with Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, you could even say Jake Matthews. We'll just stick with those three because of the contracts. Deion Jones, I guess you could say. They're gonna have a cap bind here in these next couple of years. And that's whether they stay on the team or whether they move on from them and they carry dead money.
Yeah. You know, I've been vocal on this podcast that I think they can be competitive over the next 2 years with sort of a lot of those same pieces that you just mentioned, you know, sort of being the bridge while they sort of basically rebuild. Like basically the way I broke it down, it's like they can keep the top 10 players on their team, but they have to completely overhaul the bottom 40 players, and sort of keeping the Ryans and the Julios in that top 10 sort of gives you the bridge to be competitive and win. Like Arthur Blank wants, he basically says like, I 500 is unacceptable. While you sort of buy yourself the time to revamp that bottom 40 and potentially be in a position that you can move on from some of these big contracts over the next couple of years and not be sort of in the cap quandary. But it's going to be interesting because I think the worse they perform the rest of the season, the more inclined any new people coming into the building are going to be like, "What? It's not working, so might as well just blow it up and start completely from scratch."
No, exactly right. And I think, you know, in many cases, if you trade, you could go down the roster of any veteran making a lot of money. And there's no reason to name players, but you can trade any of those guys. You're going to take a dead money cap hit. But if you've determined, if the new regime determines that they're going to basically have to go backwards before they go forwards, you take that hit. You take the dead money hit because you accrue second, third, potentially a first round draft pick for those guys. You're building for the future. Those guys are coming in for less money. And you basically do what Carolina did. You do what the Braves did for 2 or 3 years. You do what the Hawks were doing for a couple of years. And I hate to use the Hawks in a positive example. They did, their plan was correct. I mean, they came in and Travis Schlenk and came in and basically said, look, we could have kept making the playoffs as the eighth seed, but where does that get us? And so he basically stripped down whatever decent pieces they had and accrued draft picks. And I suspect, just, I don't know, but I suspect that that's what's going to happen here in Atlanta, because what's the point of keeping a $30 million quarterback and a $20 million wide receiver when you're really not going to get that much better, I don't think, in the next couple of years? Do you agree with that? Or
I feel like they can be sort of the equivalent of the Hawks and be the seven seed, be the six seed over the next couple of years. Yeah. And I think in football, that's more valuable than it is being in basketball, where it's like, basically, basketball, you either need to be the best team in the league or the worst team in the league. Football, you can be a perennial playoff team and eventually continue to add pieces and build upon that, which is harder to do in basketball. But it is one of those things where if they go, 2-14 or 3-13 or whatever this year, like it doesn't feel like that makes a ton of sense, just to be like, going 8-8 next year is a significant improvement, but I don't know if that's going to be sort of the goal or the plan moving forward. So we'll see.
Yeah. I don't even necessarily relate it to what their record is. I relate it more to, you've got a lot of holes and you need to fill those holes, and you can't just fill them with, some of the holes are going to be filled by other teams that cut certain guys, don't get me wrong, but you need to start accruing pieces for the future, which is in the NFL, it's draft picks. And I think you need to get as many young players that you are bringing in from the outside to your system to grow with you over the next 3, 4, 5 years. And I don't think you can do that if you're keeping a lot of the current guys on the roster. So to me, it doesn't even matter. Like the Carolina Panthers is a perfect example. As we're recording this, they are 3-2. Okay. I don't know that now the fact that they're 3-2, I'm sure, thrills them to no end. But if they were 1-4, it wouldn't necessarily mean they were doing things wrong. It just meant that they had won a few fewer games. Either way, they have young guys who are growing into their system with a new coaching staff.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. We will see what happens. Jeff, I appreciate you joining me today, sharing your insights. I'm sure we will talk later on this podcast at a future date. Unfortunately, I don't know if it's going to be after a win, but we'll just sort of have to see what develops later this season, and maybe we'll have a little bit more insights. But I think you're right. A lot of these sort of unanswered questions right now, I think, sort of depend on who they hire, because I think certain people would come into this building and say, we're blowing it up. And some people would come into the building being like, I can work with this. I can work with this. So it's going to be interesting come January when they start interviewing people and certain people, try to put their stamp on things. So
let me just say this. I will make this prediction right now. Whoever comes in will say, I can work with this. I want Matt Ryan as my quarterback. I want Julio Jones. I want these guys. They will all say that. But whether they actually do that 2 months later, 3 months later, is what remains to be seen.
Carolina's a good example. They said they want Cam Newton, and they didn't want Cam Newton. So yeah, you're right. Jeff, I appreciate again. I appreciate you coming on and let the people know, you know, what you're going to be covering on with the Braves and potentially the Falcons as well as other athletics, Atlanta based sports over at The Athletic.
Yeah, it's, we got a lot going on in Atlanta right now. But I will, Georgia is, as we're talking right now is, getting ready to play Alabama in a 2-3 game. So I'll be doing that. I'll be doing the Braves in the playoffs for as long as they're in it, which, you know, the way things are looking right now, they may be in it for a while. And I will be circling back to the Falcons. I won't be abandoning them completely, for the rest of the year. But, you know, anytime there's a coach firing, the shift, about what you write sort of changes. So obviously I won't be writing a column the rest of the year that want questions whether or not they can make the playoffs. I probably will be focusing more on this player or that coach or whatever, and is this something that can work for the future?
Oh, Jeff, never say never. If they rattle off four straight wins under Raheem Morris, I think that bye week column might start to get a little bit more interesting.
I hear that if he goes 11-0, he's got a shot. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Arthur, if you're listening to this. I didn't mean that.
Jeff, again, appreciate you joining us and look forward to future conversations with us. You know, at least now, finally, you won't have to talk about whether Dan Quinn's on the hot seat, as you have done pretty consistently the last, I think, four appearances you've had on this podcast over the last year or so.
It's all your fault.
You know, if I have that power, then I have used it for evil all my life. Jeff, again, thank you for joining me on today's podcast and looking forward to future endeavors.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Aaron.
So, guys, there it is. Today's Lockdown Falcons with Jeff Schultz of The Athletic. Check out Jeff's upcoming content on Braves Falcons over at The Athletic. Oh, of course, subscribe as we usually plug at the end of the episode. Tomorrow's episode, of course, will be a crossover Thursday episode in which I will be joined by Luke Braun, Locked On Vikings host, to talk about this upcoming Week 6 matchup against the Minnesota Vikings. And then we will sort of wrap up the week talking a little bit more about the Vikings game as well as answering your listener questions on Friday. So, of course, send in your questions to Twitter at Locked On Falcons, Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or via email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Until then, guys.